Tape number 2, February 16th. Jacob Feinberg. Well, we started to talk about your having gone to the Washington Street Trust in 1931 for a loan.
Yeah. I went into figuring, you understand, that my capital wasn't big enough to pay, you understand, for the bills that I purchased in New York City. So I figured I would have to have some extra money, you understand, to pay to anticipate my bills. Not having no report, no financial statement given, because it was too small, you understand, the thing of giving them. So I went and I saw Mr. McElhone from Washington Trust Company. So after speaking to him, after meeting him, he remembered me very, very well on account of being with the Prince's Dress Company. So he says, "What can I do for you, Mr. Feinberg?" And his cashier was alongside him too, Mr. Max Perlman. So I said, "Well, I'll tell you, Mr. McElhone, I'm going into business, which I didn't plan to see beforehand. I said, I need $10,000. I says, I've got no collateral to give you, nothing to show for at all, just my name. He says, I know you so doggone well. He says, I couldn't turn you down to cash me for more. And he says to Mr. Perlman, he says, make out a cashier's check for Mr. Feinberg deposit. That's what the results I had.
How much money was that?
$10,000. I didn't have nothing to show for it, not a thing to show. Just knowing me, understand, and the princes, understand. He heard a great deal about me, and he went ahead and he gave it to me without any hesitancy whatsoever, which was a very, very nice thing. Of course, naturally, I appreciate it very, very much, and I thank him considerably well. And that's how I come to get that money there, you understand, from McElhone.
Was that unusual? Did...
Oh, yes, I don't have collateral.
I mean, was that unusual for a Jewish man to go into the Washington Trust?
Well,
and ask for that kind of help.
Well, it could have
in
been
in those days.
It could have been unusual, but I was desperate. I ought to ask.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? I never inquired for anybody else if they ever done it before with Mr. McElhone. But he certainly was a very, very square shooter. There's no getting away about it. I don't know if he treated everybody else as well as he treated me. That I can't tell you. But I know that time, I forgot what kind of interest rate we had, a very small interest rate.
Well,
you want to talk about what?
Uncle Jake, I tell you, now that we're talking about going into business, let's talk about, you had a partner, did you not?
Yeah, sure.
And let's talk about your partner and the employees.
Okay, should I mention his name?
You can if you want to, sure.
Yeah, well, when I went in business, I went in a partnership with Mr. Hyman Siff, aside to the left, and all we had as an employee that particular time went in was a stock boy and a bookkeeper. And we kept this up for quite a while, and one would stay in and one would go out. And we kept this up in stand for quite a few years in order to keep our overhead down. So after we did raise ourselves a little capital, you understand, so we hired another fellow by the name of George Gatto. And he worked with me, you understand, for close on to 31 years. And we had a bookkeeper, you understand, was with us, you understand, for close on to 14 years. Of course, you only had about three girls over there. And we got along very, very well. There was no argument between the partners. Everyone knew how to do what the work had to be done.
You had two partners, right?
No, just one partner.
Just Hyman Siff.
Yeah. And we all know what the work had to be done, and nobody threw any other work on anybody else's shoulder that he should do it himself. So, but we got along very, very well.
It was a good relationship with your partner.
Yeah,
there
yeah.
Was never any animosity,
no,
hostility.
No, nothing like that.
No one felt that the other guy was getting the better.
No, no.
The better end of the bar.
No. That was just the...
You had the same bookkeeper for 14 years.
14 years. We had about three bookkeepers. And the last one was there was... I forgot what her name was. And she stayed until we closed up the business. So that's what it was about.
So altogether there were three employees.
That's all, three employees. three employees, and that's what it was. And we drew very, very nominal salaries. We didn't draw very much anyhow. Those days, you understand, we were drawing $75 a week. And, of course, naturally, we kept our expenses down as much as we possibly could.
Let's talk first about World War I, 1914.
Yeah. Well, I would have to say it's around 17, 18, 19, World War I, you understand. Well, I went ahead and I was drafted, and not wanting to go to the Army, as I figured I had to have, I was the sole support of my mother. So the results of it is I went over and saw my doctor, Dr. Haggerty, which has passed away since then, and I says to him, I says, Doc, I says, it's an awful thing, you understand, of me going away into the war. And mother's going to be left by herself, nobody else support her, just myself. He said, I'll see what I can do for you. So he got in touch with a fellow named Dr. Davis, and they got the head and they examined me, and he said, well, he says, you're not in good physical condition to go, and they put me in at 4 a.m., and that's when they went to war. So I stayed out of it, Otherwise, quite a few of my friends went there, and quite a few never came back. Actually, they were killed, you understand, over there. But as a general rule, I was just fortunate of being put in the 4A, and they never came around to that to take, because I'm being the sole support. My mother, you understand, that's the reason why I stayed out there.
Now, were you a Democrat or a Republican?
Republican.
Have you been a Republican all your life?
No, no, no. Yeah. I never changed my voting rate. I've always been Republican.
About the Depression. The Depression came just as you were...
Depression came just as I went in business.
Just as you went into business.
Because the banks were closing up at a particular time, too, in 31. That's, I think it was, 31. The banks were closing up.
Yeah.
And naturally, the only thing is that you had to live accordingly, and then you try to get yourself down to as little as expense you possibly can, and we were able to pull ourselves through. Because one bank was never on... See, there was three banks on Fifth Avenue. It used to be the Fifth Avenue Bank, the Merchants Bank, and the Washington Trust. But those other two, they had a run on them, which naturally had to fail. But Washington Trust, there was no run there. Everybody seemed to be happy that McElhoney was running it, because McElhoney was somewhat in the Mellon family. And that's the reason why nobody rushed into the Washington Trust. And they were the only remaining bank after.
But you weathered the Depression. Your business, you were able to do a little business.
Yeah, we done a little business. We went out and we plugged. And of course, naturally, the business was what it should be. But we went out and we made our, we made overhead, put it that way. Mm-hmm. We didn't lose no money. We just made our expenses on income was zero. Mm-hmm.
And when did you begin to make some money?
Well, we started to make money at the real money, and Stan was made in World War II.
I see.
That's what we started making. Up until that time, it was because prices were so low and the profits were so small that you couldn't help. You understand? It was hard to make money. So the results of it is during that particular time, then of course, naturally, everything was on almost like ration basis. They'd give you so many dresses, you understand? And you try to divide them up as much as you possibly can. And I never, never, ever wanted to cheat. I was too honest with that particular thing. I could have made myself a lot of money in that particular thing and meet a lot of people down on 7th Avenue, New York. They would try to give you, say, 300-400 dresses, but they wouldn't give you no bill. When they done that, you understand, I said, that's not the way I do business. If you give me a bill, I'll buy them. If you can't get a bill, I have no business with it. A lot of people did, but I didn't.
What were they trying to accomplish by that?
Well, it was scarce. It was scarce material.
I mean, why didn't they want to give you a bill?
Well, because it was hot stuff.
I see.
That's the reason why it was hot stuff. It was the hot stuff from the manufacturers that actually they want to pocket their money, you understand, of what they what they derived from selling it on the streets, you understand?
And they didn't want to pay taxes on it.
No, sure. That's right.
I see.
Yeah. So whatever they were getting, you understand, well, they could have put in their pocket. That's what it was. But I couldn't go for that. No, in fact, I'll tell you the truth, that one of the old...
They manufactured the merchandise. They brought it out on the streets. They were willing to sell it to you for cash.
Exactly. If you after all, you go up to the factory, and you get your garments, and they sell it out for you, and you pay them cash.
Mm-hmm.
And you, for me, you understand, if a man would come in there, you understand, and say, I want to examine your dresses, which a lot of them did, you understand, and you, if I didn't have a bill to show for that particular garment he'd pick up, there was a hole in the floor, I'd fall through it. Because I was just one of these here fellows who never believe in anything that isn't on the up and up.
So you never participated in any of that?
Oh, no. A lot of them did. A lot of them made a lot of money, but I'd be just one, if I did, I'd be caught and sent to penitentiary for it.
Let's talk about Prohibition.
Well, during a Prohibition time, naturally, of course, it was no trouble at all getting liquor, beer. Of course, it didn't have the contents, you understand, as you have during regular time. But there was during the Prohibition time, there was no trouble at all getting hard liquor. It wasn't as good as made it is at present time. It didn't have the contents of the alcohol that you have at the present time, you understand? But there's the bootleggers always supplies you with a little liquor.
Where did they get it?
Where it is, nobody seems to know, unless they had their own steels made down the cellar.
But they were making it themselves.
Oh, yeah, they had the steels there, sure. They had the steels.
Yeah. Was the social life more exciting in those days?
No.
Nightclubs more interesting?
Well, no, I would say they're more interesting right now than they are those years ago. You understand? Because after all, you went out to a place, you couldn't buy a drink in a nightclub.
But the nightclubs that were set up, you know, the clubs you went to during Prohibition.
Well, you bring your own bottle. You understand? And of course, naturally, you had some very good shows coming into Pittsburgh. In fact, I'll tell you the truth of it, if a show went over in any of the nightclubs like Carousel or Music Box, Littman's Place, you understand me? If it went over good in Pittsburgh, they were a success because Pittsburgh was a very critical city. It was very critical. But we had a lot of fun just the same during Prohibition time. And then switch the subject whenever you want to come back to the hotel now.
Well, I want to talk some more about Prohibition. You said that there was no problem getting liquor at all.
As long as you pay the price, you got it. But it was all...
Did you know anybody that got terribly sick?
Well, there was a lot of them did get sick, because a lot of them, you understand, were using a very poor amount. Wherever they were getting that ingredients to put into it, that's something I never knew where they were getting it. But they were taking chances of being poisoned. Which a lot of them did get poisoned, you understand, from the liquor. And a lot of them, you understand, would try to buy just pure alcohol alone, and drink the pure alcohol instead of having man made up.
Okay, let's go to the hotel. You moved into the hotel in what year?
1935.
And who owned the hotel then?
It was owned by the Statler people.
And you enjoyed that. I imagine you were as distressed as you may have been about your mother's death. You probably enjoyed being on your own.
Yes, that's true. Of course, after all, sisters wanted me to live with them, but I was one of these fellows being always a man on the road and always lived by myself, you understand? I didn't feel like I'd want to be living with them, you understand?
Well, you were then 41 years old.
No, I was...
When you moved into the hotel.
No, I was exactly, let's see, what year did I say? I
forgot. 1935,
you said. 1935. Well, I was 39
years old.
39 years old? Yeah, 39 years old.
I wonder why you never married Uncle Jay.
Well, I don't know. I was out with I always went with Gentile girls on parties and dates and stuff like that, and never mingled so much with any of the Jewish element. And that was the reason why I never got married. Of course, after all, when my mother died, I figured I was really too much up in years, you understand, a thing to take in a mate. So that's the reason why I never did. And And of course, naturally, I was, while I was single, that is, during the time my mother was living, I felt it was my obligation to take care of her. Because after all, she all used to say, oh, if my Jakey gets married, what's going to become of me? And of course, naturally, I didn't like it. So that's the reason why I stayed single.
Did you resent that, taking care of your mother?
I didn't resent it. No. I thought it was
you
my
duty. You didn't feel as though you were being tied down?
No, I figured it was my duty.
But your brothers were off and raising families?
Well, they were married, you understand, way before that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they being the youngest in the family, the youngest among the children, mm-hmm. I felt it was my obligation, you understand, to take care of my mother. So I did.
Well, when you moved into the hotel, you were 39 years old. It yeah. must have been something that you looked forward to. I mean, it must, you'd lived on Hobart Street with her
yeah,
in an apartment.
Exactly, that's true.
It seemed that it was a very luxurious, fine thing to do,
well,
right?
Well, of course, naturally, in Hobart Street, we had an apartment, you understand? We had a three-room place. But I looked around before I came in here. I went to the Roosevelt, and I went to the Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And after all, I came over here. And I liked the surroundings of the place. I liked the location of the place. And I figured it was handy, you understand, going to the place of business, you understand. So that time I moved in here, and I think I moved in that time. I was paying about $60 a month when I moved in here. So results of it is I liked the ones that was connected with the hotel. It didn't take me long to, because I never signed a lease as long as I've been in this hotel. And I like the boys, you understand, every one of them. So I figured, gee whiz, it's a nicer place I want to be in. And the atmosphere is very, very nice. And I knew quite a few fellas, you understand, in here because only time we had a big permanent guests in here was during World War II. We had about 525. But before that time, we used to have maybe 50, 60. Of course, right now, you forget about them altogether. But there was that was the that's really I like the.
Why I wonder why there were 525 permanent guests during World War II.
Well, there was a lot of fellas coming in here. You understand? They're connected with different big newspapers and doing a lot of write-ups and they stayed around Pittsburgh. And there was a lot of military men. You understand? Living in Pittsburgh. That's how the crowd get on there.
Mm-hmm.
That's just the thing.
Was it very luxurious? Hotel, was it very luxurious in the
1930s? It was very, very lovely, yeah. It was very, very
different
much
than it is now?
Well, of course, now she got everything all fixed up, everything all together, but it was a very, very, the atmosphere was nice.
Yeah.
You felt like you was one of the crowd of the hotel.
Yeah.
And especially when you knew the fellas, it made it so much more nicer.
How about the services? They have many more personal services then than they do now?
Well, no, it's about the same amount of thing. Of course, naturally, we had more dining rooms than we have at the present time. We had two on the first floor, which we only have none whatsoever. And we had we've got the Heart and Crown. Well, I forgot about that one. And that's all we had here. And then we had the
Chatterbox,
the Urban Room. As before, we started calling the ballroom, you understand. But
the terrace room?
Terrace rooms were, they never served, the terrace room was only there at the time when we had nightclub acts. That's what we had.
And the French room?
French room had to have food. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've been living here for 33 years?
39
years?
We're on 39. It's a long time in that one place. Yeah.
Stop it.
Pertaining to the Jewish life, used to be the Washington Synagogue was a place where most every Jew person would go into. And besides, you understand, of course, they had, if I'm not mistaken, I think wasn't the Roto Shalom up by that time already during the early?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. So practically it was, and then we had a few synagogues up on a hill. Yes, there we had about three more over there. But it's getting so now that it's more turning to conservatism, and it is going to orthodox way. Orthodox is getting to be a very, very tough proposition at the present time, because a lot of men understand the youngsters today like to know what they're talking about. And whenever they speak to them in Jewish, they don't understand it. It's the whole thing of it. That's the reason why I figured in due time, I think those who are not reformed will be going into conservatives. That's what's going to happen to you. It won't be what you call a real strict Orthodox place to go to worship. That's my personal opinion. I may be wrong.
You think that the Orthodox is going to fade away?
Well, it's going to be conservatives.
Yeah.
That's my personal opinion. That is, I don't say it's going to come at my age, at my time, mm-hmm. but I think eventually it will. In order for us to get people, you understand, to come to the synagogue. Otherwise, they don't get the young gentlemen coming. They don't come at all. The only time they come is just when it comes on the high holiday, you understand me? They come in. Otherwise, during the week, you never see any. Because during the, of course, used to be years ago, we used to always have a full crowd. Now, we're lucky we get 10, 11 people for any kind of service.
Well, don't you think that all the broadening of activities in the city, all the things that young people have to do, and young adults have to do with their children, takes them away maybe from Orthodox practices?
Well, you see, another thing is
there's so much more to do.
You see, another thing is we haven't got that many Jewish people around this country. We haven't got that many. It's like I mentioned some time ago, there was only two buildings that actually you can expect any Jewish people from. That's the Washington Plaza and the Carlton, and the Bigelow and the Carlton House. There's three of them. So the results of it is they don't want to come. You can't compel them. You can't do it. You try to get them down there, but they pay their dues, and that's about all. See, our dues are very cheap, I think.
How much are they?
Non-member, that is just an ordinary member without coming for the high holidays, is $25 a year. Mm-hmm. And the members, you understand me, that comes for the high holidays is $50 a year. Mm-hmm. Where can you go worship for that kind of money?
You can't, anywhere. Most shuls are $500,
$200. Oh, sure you can. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
A lot of our members in Lincoln are not paying out $25 a year. Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. That's for a lot of money.
Have you ever been a card player?
Well, I used to be a pretty good pinochle player. Mm-hmm. And pinochle, and I was switching myself into gin. Mm-hmm. And it used to be years ago, we used to have a boat down on 6th Street. We used to go out every Sunday, you understand, Sunday night. And we used to play poker. Mm-hmm. That's otherwise to be, do excessive cards, I never cared for. Now, you understand, when I get spare time, I play some gin with somebody.
What kind of a boat down on 6th Street?
We had one of the fellas owned the boat. He was a friend of ours.
Was it a cruiser?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we used to get down there, you understand, and ride out maybe towards Swickley and park the boat, you understand, and play cards over there. That's what we used to do. I'll never forget. I can't remember how far back it was. I usually, you understand, when we went in the boat, we always take our shirt off and our underwear off, you understand, and just sat with our trousers. So just we were pulling over, almost ready to pull out, and me being a very hairy fella, you understand me, a kid came over to me and says, Jesus, mister. He says, is that real hair? Is that positive? I just feel it. I said, yeah. I said, that's why they always say a man's right from a monkey. I says, they got a lot of hair. So it was a joke, you understand, when the kid wanted to feel see it was hair, so they scared a person. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You don't play a lot of cards now, do you?
No, once in a while we play maybe once a week. Mm-hmm. Oh, gee, that's about it.
Yeah. With the men in the hotel?
Yeah. Here or a card house, here or
two. Yeah. What about movies? Do you go down to movies anymore?
Very, very rare. I'm not a movie goer. Never care much for movies. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you the truth, when I haven't got nothing else to do, I'd rather go over to hear a trial over the courthouse. I mean, it's interesting, you understand, to hear the Commonwealth as well as the other one, you understand, presenting their cases, you see. And they're interesting. Well, maybe once or twice a week I've been invited there. So. And it's interesting sort of that we have our own what we call our own retired fellows. And we all gather together and we all walk into whatever room we feel is the best and we sit there for about a minute.
That must be fascinating.
It is. I like it very much. I'll tell you the truth of it. I like it very, very much.
But when you talk about these retired fellows, this whole group of friends that you have that are in the city, they're at the William Penn, the Carlton?
No, a lot of them, you understand, there's two of them are married. Mm-hmm. And they go home. Then we have two fellows live at the Carlton House, three at the Bigelow, and one at Washington.
I see.
That's our crowd.
These are the people with whom you have dinner? And,
oh, yeah, sure, that's right. That's true. We always... those who can get away, understand, with their wives will join us, understand me? Mm-hmm. And those who can't, they normally know exactly where we're going. And, of course, naturally, if there's a... Like, during the morning, understand me, whenever they know there's a good case going, they'll call me the telephone, come on over. Otherwise, I wouldn't go over. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Uncle Jake, what do these people and you think about Flaherty?
Well,
for instance,
I tell you the truth, a lot of people like Flaherty. The poor element do, you understand? The reason why, on account of holding down taxes as much as they possibly can. Flaherty, of course, naturally, is one of these fellows you can't buy. He's one of these guys, you understand, that actually, he would be one of these men that would be the most honest man we've ever had here in office, with the exception of Mayor McNair. McNair is the same way too, you understand. But Flaherty, in my book, is doing a very, very good job.
Well, did McNair cut city services the way Flaherty does?
Well, no, that's true.
Huh?
No, he didn't. Well, of course, he didn't have that many help that particular time. You understand, as they have at the present time. Now they got there's so many jobs. It's
but how do you feel about a guy that wants to keep taxes down and proclaim and is our mayor, but we don't get any services?
What kind of service are you lacking?
Snow removal, potholes in streets.
Well, that's the potholes. Snow removals haven't been so bad. Because we haven't had any snow this year. Or even last year, you understand. But potholes are the thing he should be doing it. But he figures on account of being the wintertime. And then, of course, if he have to close up the streets, they'd have to be rerouting altogether. And make
I
it
mean,
tough.
Here's a guy that hasn't taken advantage of federal funds.
No, it's
for housing. We are badly in need of housing.
That's
senior
true.
Citizen services were all removed. We can't pay for the people, the poor people in the projects need help.
Well, I
all the social services were taken away because the city can't afford to pay for them.
I agree with you in that respect. I'm just saying he's a little too conservative, put it that way. He's very conservative. But personally, understand, it shows you that the public likes him. Mm-hmm. You know what it is, if a man, first time in the history, that a man wins the election on three tickets. You know, that's so it shows you the public is for him. That's the thing of it. You judge a man by the masses. And there's masses, you understand? After all, you take, for instance, that fellow ran against him. That council, they spent a fortune of money for it. He would have had a most wide-open city ever laid your eyes on. It's part of that gang, you understand, would open everything up here in the city.
Well, could you see Flaherty, for instance, as having been governor of Pennsylvania, capable of being governor?
No. Couldn't be. In fact, I'll tell you the truth, he'd be making a big mistake if he ran for governorship. And furthermore, I know the papers are saying he's making a lot of trips, looks like political trips more than anything else, but if he either run against Schaap, he hasn't got a chance to win. To my estimation, of course, Schaap has done such a great job this last time with his trucker business that actually he made himself a terrific name. He may try to go out for U.S. Senate. Personally, I don't think he'd be so much in favor of running for an office on account he wouldn't want to see a colored man be the mayor. So he'd be the next man, the president of the council is a colored man. Yeah, so that's what I figured. I don't know if he'd want to see something like that happen.
What do you feel or see as being one of the most important events in your life?
Well, most important event in life, you understand, whenever you became in business for yourself, you understand, which is a very important thing, and especially when you made your success, a pretty fair success of being in business. Otherwise, there's nothing else here. Eventful, you understand, anything like that, you understand. But otherwise, that's about the best thing I could say about myself, of being my own boss. That's what counts right there, the way I look at it. Otherwise, nothing. I've done anything outstanding that I could class it better than what I just said. My estimation.
You did something very outstanding because by having taken care of your mother all those
years.
Well,
that's true. That's very true. Of course, naturally, I felt it was an obligation that I had to fulfill.
But you did it without resentment.
Oh, resentment by all means, no.